Hi, everyone, and welcome to Marketing Corner, episode 76.
Whoop, whoop.
That was...
Wow.
I just had a candy bar.
Wasn't it a protein bar?
It was a protein bar, Casper. Covered in chocolate.
Started working out, guys. You know, been there 3 times in a week, so...
Nice.
Need a protein bar.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I can tell. My wife can't tell. I was like, the other day, I was like, honey, can you see I've been working out? She's like, no.
Ouch. That's love, though. That's love that she can tell you that.
It is. I just want to point it out, not to kick off this episode wrong. Convenience is such a thing when it comes to workouts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to work out all the time before I had kids, like a lot. Then I had kids. That stopped. And now I have a gym literally in the backyard, like in my yard. So I counted the other day, less than a minute from my walk out the door, I'm in the gym working
nice.
Out. That makes a difference. Now suddenly I can do it.
There's a trick. There it is.
So speaking of convenience and marketing.
What a segue. So we're here with Fred.
Yes.
Frederick.
Yes.
Flick. How'd I do?
Nice.
That was not bad for Danish.
Yeah, that was good.
Thank you. 10 years here. Thank you. So we spoke in the last episode a bit about your journey, your background, entrepreneurship, the fuck-ups, learnings, and things of that nature. And now we want to kind of get a little bit nerdy with B2B, demand gen, the real stuff, the real... real deal that we all love talking about.
Yeah.
So as I understand it, at Sparkle Horse. I love that so much.
Yeah,
we need a soundboard. At Sparkle Horse, you guys do audits of your clients, B2B marketing audits.
Yeah.
And so we thought it would be interesting to hear some of the mistakes that you see when conducting these audits. So we asked you to pick your top three, but if we have more time, I'm sure the listeners would love more than three.
Yeah. I think we're going to drop a bit more than three, but we try to summarize the most important ones.
The most important ones.
Yeah.
So with that being said, let's kick it off over to you, Fred. But what's your number one mistake that you spot in these audits?
I think the number one mistake I spot in these audits is when you do, like, a lot of people obviously spend money on social channels like LinkedIn or Facebook and whatever. Every time I see people go in and they are trying to capture demand in awareness channels, right? That's the number one thing. And like, just to say what that means.
I was about to say, explain it for the idiots.
Yeah.
That could be me and Jen.
I'll explain it to you and Casper.
Not listeners.
Explain it to Casper.
Explain it like I was five.
Explain it like I'm five.
So it's when they're trying to capture demand in awareness channels, that means that people are trying to get people to book sales calls, book demos, try products directly as a direct response advertisement directly in the feed, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be like sending traffic to a book demo page. It could be a lead ad, something like that. But it's just, that's not the intent of the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big deal here, right?
Agreed.
People don't go to LinkedIn to buy a software product or buy whatever. They go to LinkedIn to like learn and read and engage with their community or check up on their classmates or whatever, right? Just turn a little bit into Facebook. But but like, so the intent of the people in the channel, they're on there to buy. They are there to build community, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I see, I guess, whatever, 90% or more of the budgets that are being spent on channels like LinkedIn, it's for that purpose. There's not any brand awareness or demand generation really happening. It's just buy our stuff, try this free demo, get an Amazon gift card, right?
I will say I'm 100% guilty of this early in my career. 100%.
100% same.
We all are.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
I did lead gen ads on LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah.
$17 a click.
Go for it.
to get people to book a demo. Yeah. And...
abysmal.
Got great conversions,
yeah, exactly.
Lots of conversions, but none of them were good.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And I remember we had an account manager at LinkedIn, bless her heart, because I was like, it's not working. And that's because we were doing this exact thing. We weren't using for brand awareness. We were just like, everywhere we could, let's get that conversion in. Let's get that person to sign up for that demo. Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, everywhere.
And it's kind of like, it's funny when I look back on it, because like, instead of treating the actual problem, I try to treat everything around it. I remember that, like, it's actually a case I sometimes talk about when I speak at events. Because what I would do is like, I would have lead forms and they wouldn't convert. Like they would convert pretty well, but they wouldn't convert into opportunities. Of course, because you fucking sold them a software SaaS product, like super enterprise. They were like, hey, book a demo. Like, fuck.
On LinkedIn or Facebook. Yeah.
And then instead of going back and say, okay, how can we not use Legion? How can we educate before? I try to educate them after. So I try to get them in and then set up nurture flows and all these things. And don't get me wrong, you still need that. I feel like that's not wrong per se, but it's like, I'm speeding around the bush. Like, I wasn't dealing with the real problem.
But I want to add one more thing, because this is also something that a lot of marketers face. I was incentivized for MQLs.
Yeah.
There's my fucking MQL. I got someone to sign up. And and so I think that also ties into your – you do what you're incentivized to do. I was incentivized to get people to give me their email address.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And I found a way to do that. Whether or not they became meetings or that became – close one deals was not part of my package, part of my target. And so that's more also like justification for why MQLs are shit.
Yeah.
And you need to focus on optimizing for SQLs or however you measure. But when you have those good meetings, when you have those good deals, because that was my logic was I'm going to hit my target. That's what I'm here to do. I hit my target real well on this platform, even though it doesn't actually work. Sure. Right. Yeah.
I was just going to say the same thing, right? There's two parts to kind of why it was like that, right? It's easier to measure, obviously, because it's direct response. So like here is a contact information, like it's here's an email, and here they went through this, they got this engagement score or whatever. So I can say, here's what I brought in. My MQL goal was 100 leads or MQLs a month. I hit it, right? Yeah. That's one thing. Exactly. Yeah. And then
figured out sales.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And then you could blame someone else, right?
And that's always nice.
Yeah.
is, especially if they're in sales.
Yeah. And the second thing is I think from a board level or from a C level maybe, people wanna measure marketing the same way they measure sales.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you can't.
No.
Because marketing is like it's a different beast.
Yeah.
There's different stuff that kind of marketing is so much more about moving people. It's psychology much more than it's just like sales, right? Mm. I guess I get that sales are a psychology partly to it. But sales is much more one-to-one, where marketing obviously is one-to-many, depending on the ABM motion we run, right?
Yeah.
But I think, that's probably the biggest thing to it, right?
And
it
requires a lot these days. I actually want to bring up a case here. So, without mentioning anything, any company names here, but we had recently had a case we started working on back in October. And before we started working on them, 25% of their leads or like inbounds came through direct traffic. Mm-hmm. 25%. After we started working them, if you look back a year, it has increased to 50%. And 20% on top of that is from organic search on branded search.
Mm-hmm.
So almost 70% is on branded search now. Or that's like wild. Branded. Like,
which is saving you money.
Which is saving
probably
you money.
Increasing conversions.
But the point is, and that's like a huge investment in paid social, specifically LinkedIn and also a little bit Meta. But the point is, that's non-attributable. None of it. Like there's actually, like it was so funny, I was kind of laughing at it because like we're spending serious buck here and there's not a single lead where we can go, hey, yeah, that's exactly, it says in UTM. That's because we're doing all the right things. We're doing video, podcasts, all these kind of cool things. And it's a whole motion. But if this was Casper like 10 years ago or something, the old school Casper might have been like, hey, we shouldn't be spending this much on paid social. We can't see it working, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't, and I think that comes, it's lazy marketing, but I think it's lazy commercial.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Lazy commercial, because like you said, C-level, it's easy. Okay, they hit the target we gave them, they hit the target, but what they don't look at is the quality of the lead coming through, direct traffic. We have the same thing, like our direct traffic is great, but it's not attributable.
Yeah.
And when we operate on a first touch attribution, we're not doing our jobs, you know, that kind of feeling of what is marketing actually doing.
So, and this client is kind of cool in that sense, because they were like, but overall marketing is up. Like we booked, I think it's 50% more meetings and we do it at 30% less cost. So we're like, we're happy.
That's our job.
Like we're spending less money, we're booking more pipeline.
Exactly.
Yeah, why? It. Like, why are we here otherwise?
Yeah.
And I think that's just going back to your point, Freddie, I think that's, we see it all the time that people choose the things that are most easy to prove.
Yeah. Rather than what makes sense.
Rather than what works or like makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's just a good learning for the marketers out there to kind of own the website.
Yeah.
To your point, right?
Yeah.
Marketing owns the website. It's a marketing asset. So whatever comes through the website.
Marketing sourced,
right?
Yeah.
I don't really like marketing sourced. You can always talk about it. That's a good term. But it makes the point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good it's a good way to think about it.
Yeah. Let's move on to the number two here.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what's the second biggest mistake in your opinion that we see or you see all the time?
Content. So and that ties in with with demand gen and how you kind of run that. But I think a lot of the content that's posted, and I'm not just talking paid. There's also an organic part to this. If we're looking at social. A lot of it is just like, here is our new funding round. Here is our new employee. Yeah. Here is our new offices. Here is our new whatever, ebook, white paper, report. Like everything is just us. And the way I view social anyway is you want to create a knowledge hub for where your customers go to search up, you know, or find interesting knowledge about the industry or something like that, right? So you would want your LinkedIn page to be a directory of interesting things, right? Mm-hmm. Your company page, that's how I see it anyway. So, and obviously there's room for here's our new funding round and here's our new employee because we also want to show some, you know, humanity, maybe that's not the right word, but that there are people behind it and run the memes and do all that stuff. Obviously there's room for that, but on a general, I think, scale, companies should stand for something and should have that educational element to it because, I mean, that's just, it's relationship building and that's how people buy in B2B. So that's part of for the organic. And I think for the paid part, there's just so much screenshot, text, and then book a demo on the copy, right? And there's just so many formats to run. This could be an ad, right? We're sitting here talking. This could be an ad, so run that, run the case studies. And have a run the carousels, have like the variety of different content types that kind of tells a story and solves a business problem for the people who need to see it. I think
it's like we're trying to overcomplicate these things sometimes. Like some of the things we see is like, I can see you spend a lot of time on this, but that doesn't make it great.
Yeah.
Like some of the content we're seeing is like, you spent 3 months on this piece, but it's, it's boring.
Yeah.
Like we have another case I want to reference here. So we started, it's not the same case, but we started working on them late October last year. And these guys have a super cool, it's an American company, do a lot of really cool stuff, have a lot of cool ads in general. And they tested a bunch of stuff. I remember specifically they made a huge, really fun ad back in the day when it was like with these like dolls and things that like punting array. It's super funny. Anyways, and one of the things, they stopped it. Like for some reason, it was like they moved on to the next thing, right? And then when we looked at their ads and their content, it was like, okay, guys, but this is super boring. Like it's not because you're saying the wrong things. It's just, you're talking about ROI. Everybody talks about ROI. ROI is everywhere, right? Yeah. So we're like, okay, we got to do two things. We got to inject some humans. We got to inject some humor. So that's what we did. So we used their old ads. We actually didn't even create new stuff. We kind of took stuff and repurposed it. And just that simple exercise, tripled their CTR, doubled their engagement and stuff like that on their ads, all their ads. And now it's leading to more pipeline. Mm-hmm. So it's actually like, sometimes it's just, one of the recommendations I find when it comes to content I add the most is just add people, add humor.
Yeah.
Do those two things and you're most likely on a pretty good path.
We had one of the first unpopular decisions I made at Onomundo was to stop what I consider employer branding, which was check out our new office, check out our new hire, check out our, we're doing the DHL run, you know, and we did a lot of videos around that, which was cool, but I was using my team is here to create revenue, and that isn't creating revenue. Of course, we were hiring a lot of people, so that was seen as, you know, it is an important thing, right, to show that we are a kind of place you want to work.
And it's part of it, right?
It's part of it, but it was such a huge focus. Yeah. And so I created like a pie chart, and I was like, okay, from now on, of course, you love me and my pie charts, but it was like 30% branding, 30% lead gen, 10% of our stuff is employer branding. And what I actually found is like our SOMI manager, our videographer, were kind of going, sorry, we can't work on this month because we've hit our 10%. And that's how we got the balance of like, we have to actually make money. And then we focus on what is valuable, what is interesting, what are the people we want to buy our product, what are they looking for?
Exactly.
And, as you said.
Yeah. I have a little bit more of an extreme take on
Hit
that,
us.
I think.
We love extreme.
I read somewhere that people said there was a 60-20-20 rule, so, right? So it should be 60% valuable, 20% about us, and 20% sales for social. And I would much rather have a 99-1-0 rule, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would have it to be 100%. And I think it reflects pretty well in my own content on the stuff that I do on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be as valuable as possible. I'm trying to give out, you know, useful stuff 99% of the time. Then the one time I'm trying to say something about our product, mm-hmm. or trying to say something about our stuff that I want to sell, or like request here, you can get an audit, trying to do that. And then 0% sales, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm trying to go.
That's a pretty good rule. I use very similar rules. And actually in social selling, I kind of view it like you got to give something 90% of the time so you can ask for something the last 10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for me, like when you do audits and we do all these other things, like audits, webinars, that's asking.
Yeah.
That's my world of asking. Yeah. I'm asking for something. I want something specifically. But when I do all the other stuff should be sharing, like sharing knowledge and stuff. Like when you're promoting an event, that's also asking for something. So I try to keep that in mind. And it's funny because like people, whenever they hear that, whenever I teach that to people, it's like, it makes so much sense. And then they go straight out and make ads. So it's like, hey, get your guide here. Okay, sign up for a webinar. It's like, fuck off.
That's not what we meant.
But there's also like we're privileged here, you and I, because we are privileged that we can play the long game, right?
Yes.
That's where we're in. That's what we're here for.
We don't have any bosses.
And some companies might have insanely steep growth targets to hit, right? And it forces the wrong behavior.
Yes.
Because we're like, we can't afford to just share stuff that gets 3 likes because 120 impressions, even though those 120 impressions might be super valuable, all of them, right?
Yeah.
We can't afford to do that because we need to, going back to the MQLs, show that we generate something from the efforts that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So obviously there's empathy for that. But I think also like having that long-term view will get you the short-term results faster.
Yes. So.
And I think that just one more point of that is that's, I think for me, where the ungating debate comes in, right?
Yeah.
Because I can put all my content out in the world and that's great, but I have a sales team of 30 plus people who are like, can you give me someone to call?
Yeah.
And so it is a strategy of where do we give out all this value and put this value out? And it's usually on LinkedIn, of course, and where people can access it, YouTube. But then there is some stuff we have to gate because if you're looking for this particular thing, you're probably in our ICP and we would love to talk to you.
Yep.
So it's kind of that balance of putting everything out there in the world, but you do have to ask for that 10% when people are in the right space to provide that for you.
I think that's like... I think it's an excellent example of like not going extreme on some things. Like, because we had a client previously, unfortunately not anymore, but they also ungated everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that ungating of everything actually fucked up so much.
Like, that was the like, first thing I did on Amundo. I ungated everything. And I was like, whoa.
Easy. Yeah, right? Like, and now we have it's another example. It's not about gating, but it's the same principle. Because like here we have another client where it's like, their paid search is not super ROI positive. Let's just say it like this. It's not great. We've identified it. We're doing better and we're improving it, but it's like it's never gonna be great. Like it needs to be toned down, like needs to be sharpened, and a budget needs to be allocated elsewhere. The problem is the moving of the budget is not, they're not ready for it.
Mm.
And if they did it, like sales would be like, what are we doing here? Right?
Yeah.
So even though it's not super efficient, we can't do it overnight. We can't just like, hey, we're going to turn this off and just put all the money over here. Because then now we're going to have 3 months with these 40 people over here with nothing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though everybody's like looking at each other, we all know we need to do this.
Yeah.
We just can't do it overnight. Like we're not ready. Like the business is not going to work with the business metrics. So instead we need to do it. So we're doing it slowly over time, slowly scaling it down.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with the gating part. Like you don't have to ungate everything from day one. It can be like, okay, now we're ungating these things.
Yeah, just kind of gradually
do some things, right? Like,
and maybe take some of that gated content and just ungate parts of it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like
snippets. Yeah.
Like if you have a ebook, like copy some of that out and post it on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And people aren't
slideshows, right? The carousel.
Yes. Yeah. People aren't gonna figure it out. They're not gonna feel tricked when they download your ebook and like this, I read all this on LinkedIn.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been a huge proponent of ungating everything, and it's something that I wouldn't say built my career on, but definitely made a voice for myself on. man, we have gated stuff in SparkForce, and I'm okay with that.
Fuck yeah.
Like our webinars are gated.
Yeah,
and like too. It makes a lot of sense for us to keep that gated because it's really good content.
Yeah.
And when somebody downloads that, I mean, last week or 2 weeks ago or something like that, we had a guy. How many have we done? 8.
I think we've done 8. Yeah.
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 He in a span of 2 hours. Downloaded, signed up for all 8.
Wow.
Okay, right. So he liked what you had to say.
He
call him.
He loves this. Then he's on our list.
Call
then
him.
Then I connected with him on LinkedIn and wrote, he started, in his. We asked for a job title, and then for starters, he said he put in his real job title, but by the end, he started to put in some different. He put carrot picker. so then I wrote him like, hope you like the webinars. Congratulations on your new title or your new job as carrot picker.
Did you do that?
Awesome. And now he's commenting all my stuff. We have a thing going, and he wrote like, let's talk August, right?
And that's great for your industry, right? To get him to follow you and to see what you have to say.
But like having that gated stuff, even though we're not doing direct sales from it, we still get positive signals and leading indicators.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So there's that part to it, and gating content can make sense. Mm-hmm. I think it's just like
one of the
don't make it your main growth motion because that's not gonna work.
You can't gate everything, but I think there's a balance. And one of the things we do at Anamondo to kind of strike that balance right is we have webinars that are on demand, and you have slides and stuff like that, but we put them on a podcast format free.
Yeah.
And literally how we do this podcast is I literally just take the audio and I put it into our platform and we make a podcast so you can listen to the podcast. But if you want to see the slides and you want to be able to kind of see what they're talking about, then you have to do the on-demand.
Yeah, exactly.
And because if you're keen enough to look at those slides, they're probably in a shopping state or in someone that we want to talk to.
I think it's also like for SparkForce, one of the things I heard from a lot of our agency owners is that building an email list is a really good thing. And that doesn't surprise me. It's not like I'm kind of like it's not a new thing for me. But like when I started SparkForce, like we had no one, right? Now we have 1,200 people on our email list.
Nice.
And the goal is kind of like I know some of the big dogs have like 10,000-15,000. I'm like, okay, that's what we're going for, right? So when we reach that, I might ungate everything. but the point is like that's always been like, okay, that's what we're doing right now. We're building that list over time. It's an asset. Last one.
Number three.
I think my big number three is targeting. And there are several different layers to that. Mm-hmm. Partly the like technicalities of how you set up the targeting. Should it be job title based? Now we're talking LinkedIn, right? Mm-hmm. Job title based or function and seniority or like all that. But like the major thing is I see people who want to, you know, they say our ICP is from 10 to 200 people. And my thing is just like those companies that are 10 and the companies that are 200, they probably don't have the same use case for your product.
Yes.
But they're still grouping everything together and then marketing the same message to that. So like that part of not dividing your, we call it sub ICPs, but like not dividing your ICP out into more sub ICPs and like just bundling everything together because we want to have simplicity in our ad account or whatever, right? Like that's a huge one. And I just think because LinkedIn does everyone a disservice now saying your audience size should be at least 50K, right?
Yeah.
And like PSA, it shouldn't. The audience size is the audience size. So don't worry too much about that. But like that's a big thing. I see people like messing that up. And I've seen some member skills and member interests, and I think member interests can work. I'm actually running a client right now that has that and member groups, so that's okay. But obviously, it's okay when I do it, right? I think in niche cases, it can be okay. But I just see some weird targeting setups, and I think
what we like if you take it a step up, like what I feel like we also see is just like, and we don't always see that in the audit. I think the audit like is typically, that's a very technical thing for us. So that's also why like the targeting is something we dig. But what we then uncover is that you guys are clueless about your ICP. The amount of times of people who say like, hey, we know, I know exactly who our customer is. And then you ask the person next to them, so it's this company. And like, they look at each other.
no, it's not. And then you ask a third person, it's like something else entirely. Yeah. That I can't, like, it's insane. Like, and it sounds like some sort of fallacy or something, but it's like, it's really a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, so uncovering those ICP, and I think one of the things you're really good at, not to give a super humble brag here for you, Freddie, but it's the tying the ICP into the positioning. That's one of the things I've been super impressed with, is actually like, because you've actually been really good at taking the ICP and then saying, okay, when we have this ICP, that means this is how we should communicate to that ICP.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's the, I think that's the, maybe the holy grail of B2B marketing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because different sub ICPs have different use cases and uses the product to solve different problems and all that. So that's also, that also goes into the ICP, and we talked a little bit about it, this on the webinar, right?
We did, yep.
Like, so that your ICP is not just firmographic data.
No.
It needs to be use case, or like, here's the problem, or like, jobs to be done, or one of those things, right, that needs to go in there. Like, there's a unique value proposition probably for this type of sub ICP.
Yeah.
So it's just like, that's such a huge thing. And and then, like, translating that into some sort of positioning that can give us an idea of how we want to be viewed by them as somebody who then can solve that problem. I think that's kind of the, when you nail that, that's when you get the hockey stick thing.
Exactly.
And I think a good example of this, right, is maybe when I was at Plan Day, you know, when I first joined, you know, the targeting was 18 to 65 plus worldwide. And you're like, well, but you know, we're scheduling app. So, you know, maybe 18 to 25 would be the workers, right? Yeah. And that's very generalist. I know the young people can own restaurants and stuff, but you know, so they would be what we would call the champion. Like, they're the ones who are like, this would make my life a lot easier, but they're probably not the decision maker. And so it was kind of chopping that up of like, how do we target people based on how our product can help them? What's the use case? Yeah. So it was kind of, this is going to make your life easier, and then this is going to get you ROI. Or, you know, and how do you message to the decision maker and appeal to them in a different way?
We recently had a case a few weeks ago where we mapped out the DMU.
DMU. Nice.
Yeah, I'm starting to learning from Frederick here. Decision-making unit, right? And it was so funny because, like, before we did that, we had like, okay, like, these are the target audience. These are the ones we want to go for. We're just going to go for these. This is great. And now, after mapping it out and talking with them extensively over it, and they did a lot of the heavy lifting. It's actually not us. We just told them to do it. And then they were like, then they came back. Yeah, it's actually not like these guys are involved. They're like, they're influencers, but they're not actually decision makers. They're part of the like decision tree, but they're just influencers. And we've been spending all our budget and focus on these people.
Right.
And it's like, and it sounds like a simple thing, but to uncover that is really hard. Like, it's not always that easy. And secondly, it is a massive difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because suddenly you're actually doing marketing to the people who are, at the end of the day, is going to swipe the credit card, right?
Yeah. And that's, I heard at a conference, they said, like, the new decision maker these days is the CFO.
Yeah.
So just appeal to the CFO because it's the budget.
But I also want to call bullshit a bit on that.
Yeah.
Because, Frederick, if you look across all our clients, is any of our clients going to say that CFOs are not part of the decision-making tree?
No.
Exactly, right? It's a rhetorical question, right? Because they're all like, the CFO is involved, but usually in 9 out of 10 cases, the CFO doesn't give a rat's fucking ass. Like, about your product.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting point.
The money. That's what I mean, though. Like, the final decision maker is ROI, or, you know, how is this worth the money? Like, that's the kind of position you'll have to take with that decision maker.
And I totally get that. And it's not because I don't agree, but what I see the companies, they translate it wrong. Because right now I see it all the time. Everyone's like, yeah, we got to talk ROI. No, you don't. Like, ROI, because nobody talks ROI. Like, do we talk ROI all the time? Like, no. Because, like, if you do things based on ROI all the time, it becomes somewhat fluffy. Because if you had to make decisions based on ROI of investments, you would invest in everything, right? Like, everything would be a good investment.
Yep.
There's never going to be a business where you're like, yeah, this is a bad ROI.
Wouldn't it be better when it comes to sales enablement to say, and here's the calculator to show why this is going to be financially better?
But do you trust it?
It works for us.
Yeah. No, I buy it. A lot of
because when we have
a
technical product, right? So the technical person who's like the software engineer or the embedded engineer, they're like, I get this.
Yeah.
But I need to go to my boss, the CTO maybe, to get that approval. And the CTO is going to have to go to the CFO. And I'm not saying put it in an ad.
Yeah.
But when we do sales enablement, which is also part of the kind of growth process, we also provide some kind of ROI case study so that CTO can hand it to the CFO and go, and this is why they're worth more money, because it's going to save us time over here. It's going to save this.
And on paper, I totally buy that. So Gong did a study, like they released like last week, I think. So Gong, for everyone who doesn't know, Gong is this like AI tool or like sales tool that tracks all your salespeople's calls and stuff. They have a lot of data on sales.
Yes.
And they tracked ROI. Whenever ROI was brought up in a sales conversation, they closed at, I think it was 30% less.
Really?
Yeah, I saw that too.
You saw that too, right?
I saw that too, yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And like for me, that was kind of like the final switch, or at least to some extent, it was like, I get it. Because like I remember the problem we had at Templify, if you look at the ROI of Templify, it was like billions. Like literally, we had Forrester like had to go in and validify, like, hey, this is actually true what they're saying. You can save billions. But nobody fucking believed it. Like, yeah, billions. Right. Sure. Yeah. Right? Because it's not tangible. So it became like a bit like we wanted to talk ROI, but it didn't actually, like, nobody believed us. So so I'm not 100% sure on that. I think I'm changing my mind. Like, I used to be all about the ROI training.
Yeah. I need to read the study, but I know for us, like, especially at Dixa, we were like, by using Dixa, you save yourself equivalent of 2 headcount.
Yeah.
And then that, you know, if I'm a people manager, which I am, and I'm like, okay, I can get the same output without having to hire more people, what do you say?
Yeah.
That tends to be more of a convincing case for the CFO. But.
And I totally get that. And that's what you put in your slide deck, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't
put in an ad.
No, exactly. I think that's the difference, probably.
Yeah. I wouldn't
that's
put probably in an the ad. I would put it in a sales enablement, like, and by the way, here's how you get budget approval, but I wouldn't put that in an ad. Yeah.
Good point.
But it's interesting. I got to check out that Gong study.
I'll show it.
Yeah. Cool.
There's a lot to unpack on this discussion that we just had, because
amazing.
I would push back on both of you and say I don't think the CFO is the decision maker here.
No, nope.
Okay.
I would probably call it the gatekeeper.
Yes, I agree with that.
So
I would see a gate. Okay,
because
isn't the gatekeeper in the beginning?
No, okay. The gatekeeper is the person you need to go through to get the approval. Right. So let's say you sell to the CTO. He's the or she is the final one signing off, then it's the decision maker. But they have to get sign off from procurement, maybe, or from the CFO. So then that would be the gatekeeper.
Okay.
The person you want to sell to would be the champion. And that's the person you sell the ROI story to, because you need to give the champion, which is going to be the person who champions your stuff inside of of the client's organization or the customer's organization, champions that sales process. So you need to give them the information they need to build the business case internally.
Yes.
That's the way I see it. So I think I would push back. I agree that we need to be able to talk to the CFO and we need to be able to speak P&L, right? Because that's their language, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think, to your point, I don't think ROI is going to be the main discussion.
No.
I think it's going to be part of it, but it's not going to be the main discussion. I've also seen people, Asana, the project management tool, they're also talking revenue now, right? But that's not why you buy Asana. That you buy Asana because you don't want to lose projects or you don't want to forget tasks or something like that. That's not the main, maybe it translates to revenue, but it's not the main use case. You're not buying Asana to increase revenue, right? So
it's being used wrong to some extent, right?
Yeah.
I agree.
But I would almost counter that with saying, you know, for the Asana, we dropped Asana in favor of Notion because we can do the same thing for free. And so that was our CFO talking, saying, if we can get the same functionality free or with a much reduced cost, why not do that?
Yeah.
And even though we were like, but we love Asana, we've been using Asana for years, that was the decision maker going, nope.
But that's more like a pricing question, right? Like, because it's at the end of the day, like, because you love the product, but you don't just like, you just don't like the pricing of it.
It's not really a use case thing then.
No, right?
Because that would be your CEO, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Making the decisions on the tasks, probably, I don't know.
Anyways.
But I'm seeing that a little bit. And then one more thing that I wanted to mention the DMU talk.
Yeah.
So we're able to build out messaging then across the DMU. And if you want to be even go even in more in depth with that, you can make messaging for different buyer types, right? If you would like to. So you have the logical buyer, mm-hmm. or the economic buyer or yes. the emotional buyer. So like there, it can, you can keep opening it up and making it more and more complicated, but yeah. Getting that
the first step is pretty important, right?
Yeah, yeah,
mm. We see that
yeah.
all the time. All right, we have gone a little bit over time.
That's okay.
Slightly, but yeah. I kind of dig it.
This is good. It was
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, it was. I feel like we could do a couple more of these.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're going to lose people's attention soon.
Yeah, sorry for dragging it on. Thanks for coming in, Fredrik.
Of course.
Thanks for tuning in, and yeah. see you tomorrow, or like after Easter, technically. So, yeah. But yeah. see you. And,
happy to. Thanks for having me. It's been yeah. a lot of fun.
Thanks yeah. for coming in.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Take care, and thanks for listening, peeps.
Drive safe.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.